We use like GoPros on the handlebar, and then the rider needs to have a transmitter in his back pocket. But then we have like live footage from a rider that we stream into the mainstream. And that's actually also quite cool. And technology will bring more and more. Like one day, probably we'll all have a small camera in our helmet.
G'day, legends, and welcome back to the Press Room Podcast presented by Zwift Legends, episode 100. We made it, and thank you so much for joining me for another episode. I wonder, is there anyone out there that's listened to every single episode besides me, of course? If you have, let me know. I want to hear about it, and I probably know who you are as well. So, shout out to anyone who's listened to an episode from zero all the way through to 100. And you know what? It's actually episode 101. I forgot I did a little bonus episode many moons ago. So technically 101, but for the sake of the hype train, episode 100. And it's good to have you here. I hope you enjoyed last week's episode with Cadel Evans and previous to that, Fabian Cancellara. And if you haven't listened to those already, make sure you hit them up. But today's guest, another world champion, and this time in the mountain bike discipline. I saved this one for 100 for a reason, okay? Nino Schurter. Nino Schurter is the greatest mountain biker of all time. It is undisputed. There is no question. He is the GOAT, okay? Now, if you're a mountain biking fan, you're going to be frothing at the mouth, okay? If you're a off-road cycling fan, you'll be frothing at the mouth. If you're not a big mountain biker, you don't quite follow the scene as much. If there is one name that you will know, it's Nino's. And if you don't, picture Mariana Voss's Palmarès and racing style and just apply that to the men's mountain biking scene. That is what you get. You get Nino. He is a 10-time cross-country mountain bike world champion. A 10-time world champion. He's won, I believe, 8 or 9 overall World Cup wins, so the total across the entire year, including the reigning champion from last year, and he's an Olympic gold medalist. This man has it's just unbelievable how good this guy is, even still at 37. And you know what makes this so juicy is that he has seen in his whole career many rivals come and go, and he's defeated them all. But now he's got the likes of Pidcock and Van der Poel sniffing on his heels, and it's created this brand new rivalry that mountain biking fans and cycling fans all around are licking their lips to see the three of them, the big three in the mountain biking world, go head to head. And I'm really excited for the Olympics coming up and some of the World Cups that will follow as we get closer to Paris. So Nino, he is a legend, and I really hope you enjoy this episode. He was a fantastic guest to have on. He really loves to laugh. He's a funny guy, actually, I have to say, and I think he shares my I guess, let's say, enthusiasm for the great round world we live in. And he just has plenty to say. It was really good. In this episode, we talk about a number of items, including: how does he stay at the top of his game for so long? How has he done it? How has he stayed ahead of all the young riders coming up and trying to snap at his heels? How has he developed his game, developed his training as the sports science and knowledge has grown and changed, and the equipment has grown and changed across his 20-odd year career? And we also talk about his off-season, because that's when we caught him in his off-season. And he does some very interesting activities, I have to say, like foiling. That was something different I haven't heard about. And we also talk about the coverage of mountain biking, which is sort of dominated and produced by Red Bull. And we know that Red Bull do such a great job with all action sports. They're using drones, they use fixed camera around the mountain bike circuits, and they just create such a nice package to watch. If you haven't watched any mountain bike World Cup cross country or downhill or even short track, I highly recommend that you do so, because it is a fantastic package to watch with all the different camera angles. So we talk about that and the future of how, you know, mountain biking and other circuit-based racing, like World Championships and the road, for example, might go to with regards to, you know, lifting up the coverage. And finally, we talk about the Olympics, you know, and what Nino's got to do to beat these riders coming at him, like Pidcock, like Van der Poel, and the different types of circuits that are being thrown onto the World Cup circuit and the World Cup series these days. So I know you guys will love this episode, and it's a big one, the 100th. So, legends, we must say a big thank you to our major and title supporter, Zwift. It is the greatest indoor training platform there is on the planet. The community, the smorgasbord of events, whether you like sort of fondos, racing or training, Zwift has it all. And for the Australian listeners, finally, the Zwift Kicker Core, Zwift 1, I think that's what it's called, the Zwift Core Zwift 1. Now, let me get this back up so I can get it right. It's got a long name, so forgive me if I get it wrong. The Wahoo Kicker Core Zwift 1. There we go. This is the Kicker Core that now has the virtual shifting hub, right? So you can use any bike on it. You can use an 8-speed bike all the way up to a 12-speed bike. So if you just have a commuter at home, you can chuck it on. If you've got a 12-speed GRX gravel bike at home, you can chuck it on. And it has the virtual shifting in this little hub. It is a real game changer, and it just takes one of those barriers away to ride the trainer. So really, really good. And Zwift, they just know what they're doing. It's a great unit. You can get the package with a year's membership with Zwift, so that just makes it even more easier. So check it out. If you haven't got a trainer yet, the Kicker Core was the best value unit you could get previously, but now you must get this Kicker Core Zwift 1. That is the go, and it's now available in Australia. And finally, legends, we have one more supporter that we must shout out. It is IGP Sport, okay? You might have noticed Chris Froome recently announced a new cycling computer sponsor, and I wonder what kind of package, what kind of financial package did Froome Dog get for that? This is it. This is IGP Sport, okay? But he's just jumped on the bandwagon. I've had one of their units for over a year now, okay? I was given a year ago the IGS 630. Now, this unit, they've created a new one since then, but this unit is fantastic, right? 5 or 6 years ago when this brand began, they created some cycling computers, their first couple of units, and they sucked, right? And then years down the track, last year I was given one, the IGS 630. Now, this one is $240, right? And you can use TPR-20 for 20% off, so it's even cheaper, so around $200. And I thought, all right, I'll give it a go, see if it's any good. I use the Wahoo Bolt predominantly. I like the app that the Wahoo Bolt has on your phone, so you can sync routes really easily to the unit. That is how I use cycling computers, okay? I just like to use the navigation. I do a lot of gravel riding, off-road stuff. I'm always creating routes. I want something that I can download or export the GPX to the cycling computer app, which then syncs to the unit seamlessly, no problems. I don't have to, restart the app and then try again. I don't have to do any of that. This works seamlessly. And then the actual navigation on the unit is really, really good. Turn by turn, the routes load up easily. The detail in the roads around where you're traveling is good too, in case you get lost or take a wrong turn, you can find your way back. And, you know, to be honest, I'm still using it now, but I had the Wahoo Bolt previously. I actually lost it in this year period of having the IGS 630 because I just never took it off my bike. So I ended up finding the Bolt, but that just gives you an idea that I didn't care because this unit works. So why would you get it over the Bolt? Well, the Bolt's fantastic, don't get me wrong, but it's around $450, is it not? This unit is $240, and then use the discount code TPR-20. Oof, that's going to be pretty affordable. And don't listen to Froome Dog. When he says use the IGB Sport, he's barely used it. I've had the unit for longer. I know it, okay? I know it, and it is decent. So if you want a more cost-effective price point unit that actually works, this is it, okay? So the IGP Sport, go to the Australian website if you want to check it out. And if you have any questions, just hit me up, send me a message on the Instagram page, and I will give you all the info you need to know. TPR-20, you get 20% off. All right, legends, this is it. It's time to get stuck in episode 100. It's great to have you here. Nino Schurter, the mountain biking goat. I'll see you on the other side. Nino, have you, outside of competition, have you spent much time in Australia?
No, I have been there for some, yeah, for some competition. Actually, yeah. My first world champion title I won in Australia.
Is that right? Where was that?
Canberra.
Okay.
2009.
Canberra, we say Canberra. That's hilarious.
Canberra.
Oh, that's how it should be saying. Yeah. Oh, good memories.
And then I've been back there in Cairns for some World Cup racing and World Championships in, what was that? In 15, that's also a while ago. Yeah, but it's the only chances I had to be in Australia so far. It's a bit far from Europe.
It is so far, isn't it? It's so far. Did you know, I was looking at the map the other day, like the world map, you know, when you see it as a flat picture, and it has all the countries laid out. On the map, Australia is actually much bigger than it appears on the map. So they scale it.
They scale it, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a cool website. You can go to True Size. And then you can pull all countries to the equator, and then you see the real size.
Oh, that's...
Because the world is the true size.
True size. All right, I'm typing that
and
in.
Then you're like, and also like Greenland or something. It's way too big, actually, because it's like, yeah, if you want to put a round Earth on a square paper.
Yeah, if you believe in that.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. All right. True size. I've got it in there. I can look at that later. That's super cool. Hey, Nino, is this your off season at the moment?
Yeah. No, I just started training again for 2024, but yeah.
Okay.
I had some good off time, some holidays, and now I'm back in training. Yeah.
What do you do in the off season?
So I think it's quite important to first, after the season, to take really a break, to rest, to do some holidays for 2-3 weeks, not touching your bike, be a bit active other ways, but for sure not riding and not training. I think that's really important to be motivated again and to recover well.
But what do you do? Like, what do you actually do? So say you're staying active, are you going for hikes? Are you walking the dog? Things like that.
Whatever you like, it's also important that it makes you pleasure and you're having fun. So I've been first with my daughter. I've been in Italy for some holidays. I did some wing foiling and
really?
She did some windsurfing a little bit and stuff like this. So just do, if you really feel, you also can just lie next to the pool. It's also, I think it's important that you really rest.
Yeah.
And later I was in Iceland. We did a lot of hikes, stuff like this. So it's for your brain to recover, to come a bit down from all the racing, from traveling, from all this pressure all the time, doing something that you just enjoy and where it's just where the fun must be in the focus. And now I'm back in training, still not racing. Racing is still far. I will do my first competitions in mid-March.
Gotcha.
But yeah, it's again like every day is like planned for training plan.
Okay. Do you get recognized in Italy, and when you're on holiday, do people come up to you and ask for photos, things like that? Does that happen often?
It depends a bit where, like there it's like as soon as it's a place where it's like active people and like a bit enjoying sports, then I get recognized, especially if there's like Swiss people, then it's happening often. But yeah, it's also pleasant. In Iceland, it was like,
yeah.
Iceland was actually, I also enjoy that when nobody knows me and
yeah,
I just can be a normal person for a while.
Yeah, for sure. I always think about like the world's best cricketers, you know, cricket, Indian cricketers. They often, like one of the best cricketers ever was Sachin Tendulkar, and he couldn't even live in India because he just couldn't go anywhere, like literally, you know, like in his home, in your hometown, sometimes that's the hardest place to be for a an athlete or someone who's got some fame. But I guess
it's also nice when you like when you see people enjoy what you do, and see, especially with kids, I quite enjoy when they when they make big eyes, oh, this is this guy I saw on TV or whatever. And it's it's also something really cool, but there's also moments where it's a bit annoying when you when you're lying next to the pool. It's also nice when nobody recognizes you.
yeah, for sure. That's really cool. And you mentioned a bit of foiling as well. That's cool. That's really cool.
It's quite cool, but I just started for some, so I can't say I really foiled, but I tried.
Fair enough. So one of the big reasons why I wanted to talk to you, outside of you being, you know, one of the greatest cyclists of all disciplines, of all time, you know, just you've such an amazing career, and it's really a privilege to speak to you. But one, whilst you've had such a career of dominance, you know, and continued level at the top, and I really like in the last few years how you've been challenged a little bit more from different sides. So say, for example, you know, the newcomers of the sport, like we've seen with Pidcock, like we've seen with Vanderpoel, these riders coming in and giving you a real fresh challenge, which is, from my point of view as a viewer, and I love the narrative of cycling. And for me, the new riders coming in, trying to take down the man who's been at the top for so long and still is. I love that narrative. And I just wanted to know, how do you sort of stay, like, I don't know, like when you see new riders coming in to the level of Pidcock and Vanderpoel as examples, does that motivate you to step things up, or you know, to continue just really trying to find every percent?
For sure, yeah. I think it's quite important to stay motivated. Or like, if you see like, if you have like people that you really really want to beat them, and but I was lucky through my whole career. I always had these big opponents, like with Absolo. I really like, he was the mountain bike star of the scene, and then I tried to beat him, and I gave everything to beat him, and I knew I need to be on my best to beat him. And then I had some great battles with Yaroslav, the same thing again, like, and then with Van der Poel coming, for sure it was also like, now is this young kid super talented trying to win mountain bike races, for sure gives you motivation, and it's also nice. It's like, it's pretty cool that those riders coming in, showing also more attention to the sport. It's something I quite enjoy, and it's nice I can still battle with those young kids. It's it's not getting easier, but I quite enjoy, and I think it's quite important to have those rivalries, to stay motivated, to give everything, to even in training, you know, when you really need to dig deep, to see a goal. If you want to beat those talents, you need to be on your best.
I kind of think of it like junior cyclists, and when you were a junior, when you win all the time, sometimes juniors have it lucky with where they live or just the current crop of talent around them. They might always win, the really talented ones, because they don't have enough competition around them. But then when they go on to a national level or international level, then they get challenged and maybe they get beaten. And that's often a really good turning point for junior cyclists, because they realize, oh, you know, I can't just turn up and win. I need to lift again. And maybe that's the similar thing when you're when you as an adult and you get someone else coming in who can challenge you, it pushes you to go a bit more, right? As opposed to just being at the top all the time.
Peter, if those competitions or those races where you are disappointed or you, someone was beating you or you really feel I need to step up to keep up, it's those moments where you learn the most and where you see it's not enough. And that's for sure the key moments, like if you realize, hey, there's others out there that they are pretty fast too.
yeah. And you just mentioned it before. Have you noticed a rise in attention in cross country mountain biking since Van der Poel and Pidcock have come onto the scene recently? Have you noticed a bit of a lift or?
For sure, they also helped, but I think it's also in general the development in the sport. Like since a few years, it's going quite well. It's for sure had to do with a lot Red Bull doing a really great production, making the sport actually accessible for a lot of people to actually see what is mountain biking.
Yeah.
I think that was the most important thing in the past, let's say, 8-10 years, that they really made a great production where you can watch it worldwide quite easy without having too much burdens to go over to. Like that's for sure was the most important thing. And then like for sure also this great racing, it's like tight racing, big battles. I think that's also what people love and people like to see. And then when a road guy or cyclocross guy is coming in, for sure it brings a new spectators again to the scene, and then they stick hopefully there, and we'll keep on watching. And it's a nice development the past years in the mountain bike sport, and now also Discovery taking over, hopefully making even a better job and bringing it to a bigger audience. Would be cooler, but I think we are in a really good way, and all those riders from other disciplines for sure help as well.
Yeah, and you're right. The extended coverage or improved coverage. You know, I would watch it over here in Australia on GCN, and watch many of the World Cups because it's the viewing and the coverage is so good. You know, you get all the different camera angles of the different features and sections on the circuits. Then sometimes I use the drones, which is really cool. Like I love seeing that. And I reckon, don't you think drones might be the future? Like maybe 20 years' time, the entire race might be covered by like, I don't know, 20 drones that kind of swap, you know, bits of coverage. That would be, that would be so cool.
I think like the following cameras shows also the speed. If there's all cameras just static, sometimes you don't get the feel of the speed. So I think it's important to have some cameras like drones, or even it could also be fixed cameras on athletes, like on the bike. I think that's something where we're also going to see soon. But I think it's also important to have like the fixed static cameras, because if not, you're getting sick watching the race, because it's like...
Oh, it's true.
I think it needs to be a good mix, but... The technology is quite insane what it's now possible, and I think those drones are really cool to see the speed, to see a bit more what it really means to ride a trail down fast or whatever. That's pretty cool. That wasn't possible a long time, but now you also get this feel, and I think it's nice for the spectators to have this view.
Do you watch Formula One, Nino?
Sometimes. I'm not a huge Formula One fan, but I enjoy sometimes to watch.
Well, I ask because Formula One for me is one of the benchmarks for sporting coverage. NBA is similar, the basketball, but Formula One in terms of a motorsport or an active sport, where they place their cameras in the coverage. You know, they've got cameras on the front wings, they've got them on the course, and my favorite, and this could be one they could use in cross country or any cycling, they have one in the helmet. It's an incredible view because that is the one camera that shows the speed of how fast they are going, and you get the sense what they're, it must be in the visor, Nino, because you see like the lights, it's almost like they're going warp speed. And imagine that, the point of view cam from someone like yourself on a real hectic rock garden, like that would be so sick.
Yeah, I hope technology will make it possible. So far, yeah, on cycling, everything needs to be light and it needs somehow to fit. Like on a car, it's a bit easier to have like all the transponders and everything. Yeah. But also there, technology will come soon. I'm actually involved in the organization of a Swiss cycling cup, the Bike Revolution. And there we have already onboard cameras on the bikes. We use like GoPros on the handlebar, and then the rider needs to have a transmitter in his back pocket. But then we have like live footage from a rider that we stream into the mainstream. And that's actually also quite cool. And technology will bring more and more. Like one day, probably we'll all have a small camera in our helmet.
yeah, that's awesome. Oh, that's really good to know. God, yeah, I could talk about that forever. Now this is one thing I'm interested in mountain biking. I'm more of a CX and a road man in terms of the sports that I compete in. I've done a little bit of mountain biking here, but you know, in cross-country mountain biking, are there certain courses and terrains and features, for example, that suit some riders more than others? Like when you think about a course that really suits you and certain features you like to see in a circuit, what are those features that you know you can execute better than most of your competitors?
For sure, there's like courses that suits the one rider a bit more or the other. It's like it's quite a variety of courses. Like now we see a lot of like modern tracks where they come to a venue, need to build actually 100%, like especially like all those Olympic venues now, they come to a hill and there's actually no trail and they need to build 100%. So this is like the modern tracks where it's like, it's almost like sometimes like a bit of a BMX track or pump track where they build jumps, corners and try to bring also some natural stuff in with rock gardens. But it never have the same feeling like when you build a track, like let's say in Lenzerheide World Cup, where they have great trails already and they can use those trails and build around those trails. Yeah. So then there's also like with climbing, quite a difference. Some tracks have a lot of climbing that suits for sure a bit more the climbers, longer uphills. You see a bit of everything, but mountain biking, due to the course needs to be between 4 and max 5 Ks, it never can be dramatic different from one to the other. So like as a mountain biker, you need to be quite a complete rider. You need to be able to climb well. You need to be powerful for punchy uphills. You need to be technical rider. So you need to be of everything. So it's like, you need to be almost a bit like, if you would compare like to an all rider on the road or whatever, it's not, if you have great climbing skills, you will not make it in mountain bike, because there's also sometimes just punchy uphills where you need to do a lot with a lot of force. So I think it's in general, as a mountain bike, you need to be as an all-rounder complete rider to be successful. But still, there's courses where it's like sometimes a bit more climbing suits a bit more this, some courses are a bit more technical that suits the more technical riders. So yeah, but I actually enjoy like those tracks where it's quite difficult technical wise, so I'm quite good at this, or I can still have a small advantage over all the riders when it's quite technical difficult. But dry, I don't like that much, like wet conditions. When it's slippery, I always want to have traction on my back wheel. I like to stand a lot on my bike, and if you got forced to sit, I don't like that too much. And then also like not too short, not too long climbs. When it's like somewhere in between, that's where I'm the strongest. Like a track like Val di Sole, I would say it's the perfect track for me, for my type of rider.
Yeah, and I think everyone can think who's listening now about how, you know, you have to be an all round
rider to be a successful mountain biker. We probably all know, listening, a mountain biker that you're thinking of right now who's very good, very successful, might be in your state, might be in your country, and no doubt there'll be someone who's good at all parts of cycling. That's really interesting. Next on, Nino, you know, you are, how old are you now? Are you 36?
37.
37. Right. Okay. 37. Fantastic. You look $1 million. Seriously. I'm looking older on this stream right now. Nino, part of this is one of the reasons all of the best athletes in any sport are a step above and you know, end up being the best ever is because they are able to stay in shape, stay healthy, stay fit, injury free for the most part. When you think about any athlete who's been at the top of the game in any sport, it's always one of those consistent things. They've managed to avoid injury, serious injury, and that's always because they're so well prepared. And I wondered, how have you just stayed in such good shape for such a long time? You've had such a sustained time at the top of the game. No doubt that's due to a lot of preparation, recovery, everything.
Yeah, I think you need to be well balanced. And so in all different aspects. So, and there's no, I think there's, it's a good slogan to have, like, there's no shortcuts to success. So you need to build everything slowly up, and you can't just train from one year to the next plenty of more hours. You can't just, like, from one day to the next just do much more force stuff, or everything needs to be in balance. And also, like, with your efforts and recovery, you need to be able to slowly build up. And I was lucky that I was able to get slowly build everything up, and I never had, like, I'm quite lucky. I never had a bad injury or bad crash or whatever. I never fall far back because of any kind of an injury or sickness. But I was always able to improve maybe there a little bit, and then see, yeah, maybe I can work a bit on this part to get a bit better there. And I think that's the key. And also, like, in life, to have your whole life in balance and give every aspect his weight. And I think, that's what I managed quite well in the past years, to find the right balance in every small aspect. And for sure, there's always places where you can improve and get better. But in general, if you find a bit the balance, that's key.
Okay. And you know, from the start of your career till now, you've kind of seen, you've been, I guess, through the shift where sports and exercise science have really come into how people are preparing in all sports now. It's taken a bit more, maybe people are using that knowledge a lot more. And how has that, you know, the rise of science affected your training and preparation?
Yeah, so the sport changed quite a bit over the time I'm racing now. Now we have shorter courses, shorter race duration. Everything changed, actually. Also, our bike changed dramatically.
The when bikes, you see a bike, yeah, true.
With narrow tires, 26-inch hardtail, mostly with narrow handlebar. Yeah. It's almost a different bike now than it was. 18 years ago. I was really lucky. I found a coach. With Nicolas, he was from the beginning, he really realized what is mountain biking. He not just took like training plans from the road and like, you just train like same as a road rider. It's such a different sport. It's like, it's a completely different thing. And from the beginning, we put a lot of focus on train your coordination, train your technical skills, but also train your power, force. Yeah. But at the beginning, I was the only athlete in the gym really doing force, and now you see a lot of mountain bikers doing gym work. But I was already 15 years ago, I was spending a lot of time in the gym. Wow. and all those things. I was lucky to also have good people around me to help me to find the right way. And also with being now 20 years in the same team with the Scots Ram team, it also helped. Like, you build up such a great relationship, and everybody knows where his weaknesses and strengths are, and you can like build up and get better, and or at least for me it's now to keep it.
To keep it. that's great. Yeah, it's really unique, the team you have around you for such a long time. That's super, super special, and no doubt really influential to your to your success. Now, the final topic I'd love to talk about is next year, 2024, Paris Olympics. Super, Paris, that'll just be nice to have Olympic Games. And this will be your fifth. You're a five-time Olympian. That is incredible. Well, you will be.
I'm not qualified yet. So.
Not qualified yet. Yes, excuse me. We don't want to jump too far ahead. But even still, been to the Olympics four times. You're obviously a gold medalist as well and been close on some other occasions. Does having an Olympics, how does that affect your preparation, having the thought if you qualify an Olympics in the background there?
That gives a lot of motivation. Sure, it's awesome to be part of the Olympic Games. It's like, yeah, you have the chance every 4 years. It's great to see or to come together with all those other athletes, feeling this atmosphere, this special atmosphere where you have just at the Olympics, and it gives a lot of motivation for me and to work again hard and try again, hopefully to qualify and hopefully to battle for another medal. And Paris, it's also pretty cool. It's almost a home Olympic Games. It's train, I'm in 4.5 hours, I'm in Paris. So it feels really close, and that's quite nice. I was like, already with Tokyo, I was like, it's probably going to be my last ones. I really want to enjoy it. But then the whole Corona thing changed everything. It wasn't like the Olympic Games, what it's normally. It wasn't the nice Olympic Games I was hoping for. So I hope I can go to Paris and enjoy my last Olympics on his fullest.
Where do you keep your gold medal?
I have in my house, I have the three Olympic medals I won. I have those three, and when I won world championships in Lenzerheide, I got the horn of a animal we have here, the Steinbock.
The Steinbock.
I have on that horns, I have those three
medals,
the Olympic medals. All other medals, they don't find any place.
Yeah.
Now, they are in a box.
These medals deserve to be shown, yeah. I've held a gold medal before, and it was Stephen Bradbury's. You know, he's the figure skater. And he won the Olympics in... I can't remember what year. It must have been 2000, maybe Sydney. But I don't know if you would have seen the video before, Nino. He was in the final, and all his competitors fell over in the last corner. And he skated through to gold. There's eight competitors in the final of the, I think it's a 4K, 2K loop. And his coach had told him, and the funny thing was, in the qualifying semi-final to get into the final, it happened then. They all fell over, and he went through first place. He qualified. And so come the final, his coach told him, said, "Don't you dare try and compete with these other seven, because you're nowhere near them. You know, you're nowhere near them. Sit at the back and hope some of them fall over and you get a medal." And then... You have to look it up, Stephen Bradbury. It's a whole thing.
Okay, I need to look that up.
And the entire field fell over, and he's just gone across the line like he's won the gold. It was incredible. And so
sometimes you also just need to be lucky, or you need to have the luck on your side.
The funny thing was, mate, was for two Olympics prior, he was the favorite. He was the Olympic favorite going into the Olympics 8 years before. But in someone crashed in one of the Olympic warm-ups, and they cut his leg with their skate, and it took him out. It almost destroyed his leg. So on the year where he was Olympic favorite, he was the big champion to come in, it got taken away from him. And then 8 years later, you know, maybe he earned the gold. He might have won that game. Mm-hmm. And it's really, you know, the Olympics is something special, isn't it? Like, it's
definitely something special. And, you know, also, like, if you qualified, it's like, for sure, to win a medal, it's still difficult, but it's a lot of athletes are also missing, because now we are like in Paris, it's just, I think, 36 riders now. So, like, yeah. And we from, like say for Switzerland or France, we are some of the strongest nations, and we have like many riders in the top 15, but France and Switzerland can just send two riders. So there's a lot of good riders are actually missing, and it also makes the race then a bit special because quite a few strong riders are just missing in the field. But yeah, it's just Olympics are special, and it also throws extra attention on you. You know, like if you have the possibility to win an Olympic medal, it's also something that's really worthwhile, and that makes it as well a bit more energized. And
brilliant. Well, Nino, that's all I got for today. Thanks so much for coming on the Press Room podcast. So nice to speak to you all the way over here in Australia, mate.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to talk to you, and hopefully see you one day on the bike.
Yeah. Thanks, Nino. Take care. Have a good Christmas.
All the best.
Thanks, mate. All right, legends, that's another episode of the Press Room Podcast done and dusted. A big thank you to Nino Scherder for coming on the podcast and joining us for an absolute elite conversation. And a big thank you to Wall for listening yet again, week after week. I hope you enjoyed this episode 100. And I can't wait for episode 101 next Wednesday on the Press Room Podcast. Ciao.